Welcome to EAA Radio. I'm Wireless Mike.
And I'm Matthew. And in this segment, we are joined by Kim Sheeter, who is the author of How John Paul Riddle Made Safety Central to American Pilot Training. Welcome, Kim. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
All right. And everybody's heard of Embry-Riddle University, but not everybody may know of the story of how it was founded and about John Paul Riddle. So why did you decide that to go ahead and write this book about him?
I do work for the university, and I realized there was no good bio out there. And I thought I could knock one out in about a year, which was incredibly arrogant and naive because I had a lot to learn about the culture surrounding aviation through the 20s and beyond. And one of the first questions that kind of intrigued me is the government turned to John Paul Riddle when he was barely 40 to help stand up the civilian pilot training program at the University of Miami. And then to train RAF air cadets in this cow town in Florida, and then expand that to also training U.S. pilots once we got into the war. And I kept thinking, well, why him? You know, he wasn't a big marquee name like a Lindbergh or a Hughes or someone like that. So I was kind of intrigued on why they turned to him. And I think a lot of his credibility came down to the safety record that started back in the mid-20s when Embry-Riddle's flight school and then associated businesses were started.
So he did a lot of pilot training, and he also did some pilot training for Brazil because he was very well known. And what can you tell us about his Brazilian pilot training?
At the request of the government, our government, and also with, you know, enthusiasm from their government, he set up a school, aviation school in Brazil. And there is still an Embry-Riddle presence with Brazilian students today, which I'm sure he'd be very happy to hear.
So you were focusing on the safety aspect and the things that he brought to safety. What are some of the major innovative things that he did in safety way back in the beginning of the pilot training?
I think some of the genesis is that he got grounded right off the bat when he joined the Army Air Corps. There were no flight slots, so he had to spend about a year on the ground learning to be a mechanic, and that gave him a lot of respect for the machines. And so that was very much, you know, his mindset when he did start pilot training. When he and Embry started the flight school, he considered the Army Air Corps as the gold standard. So that's where they recruited most of their instructors. He said, if I have good instructors, I don't have to worry about my students. And he was very interested in anything going on to advance safety. He would go over to Dayton, which is not a big hop from Cincinnati, where the school started, and kind of look over the shoulder of some of the research that was going on there. Consequently, Embry-Riddle was one of the first five flying schools that was certified by the U.S. government. But two kind of funny stories. You can adapt, but you're also in a learning curve. The airmail pilots, because Embry-Riddle started an airmail route in 1927, Riddle and Embry insisted that they have parachutes, which you would think would not be a hard sell, but not everybody was pro-parachute, as strange as that sounds. And they insisted on fire extinguishers, which also seemed like a very good idea when you're hauling mail and sometimes people. There was a lot of parachute research going on over at Dayton. They actually had a mannequin, kind of a crash test dummy, called Lieutenant Stiff. And sometimes Lieutenant Stiff would get stolen and pop up at Embry-Riddle in a cockpit or behind a desk, sort of like colleges stealing each other's mascots. But they did a lot of parachute training at Embry-Riddle, and they wanted everybody in on it. Almost everybody took a jump, including people who were not actually pilots, but they still got some parachute training.
So did any of that parachute training actually get utilized in order to save any lives?
There was a young woman who had a unique design before the school started, and she made a jump over at Blue Ash, which is another airport in the area close to Lunken Field. And John Paul Riddle was on hand to rescue her when she got hopelessly tangled in her her landing. But I don't know that anybody specifically was Caterpillar Club, although the first black employee, and he was a contractor, worked for the Irving Company, the parachute company, and he came and sort of did the master class training in packing parachutes, which is something I only found out in the last year or so. He was a Tuskegee grad who also worked as a Pullman porter, but when he could get off, he would focus on aviation.
So how did the flight school end up being developed into what is Embry-Riddle University now?
I would love to say that it was this keen strategic vision of the future of aviation. That sounds good. But you have to remember, these were two pretty young guys. Riddle was only 25. Embry was a couple of years older and a whole lot richer, which helped. But they liked planes. They wanted to fly. They wanted to have more planes. They wanted to have more time to fly planes. So they looked at every way they could think of to monetize those planes. So they had tourism business. They had photogrammetry pretty soon. They had some small cargo enterprises, and of course the airmail route really kind of stabilized them financially, because then they had a predictable cash flow. But they would be pretty much game for doing anything if it helped them pay to keep airplanes in the air.
And one of the other things they did is they decided that, you know, hey, we're going to start a whole airline so they could fly back and forth from Brazil. Tell us about how that started out.
Yeah, Riddle Air came later. It had a couple of different names, but they did fly. Eventually, by 1950s, John Paul Riddle was called the king of cargo. There were really only two major cargo providers. On the West Coast, it was Flying Tigers, and on the East Coast, it was Riddle Air. And they said they flew everything from, artichokes to zebras. They flew circus animals. They flew small cars. I have a wonderful photo of them loading elephants onto a Riddle Air flight. They also flew some Dew Line government contracts. The Dew Line was an early defense warning system. And if that rings a very distant bell, it's because they flew a lot of stuff to support infrastructure in Greenland. That's where some of the monitoring stations were and are. So he was a government contractor as well.
What aircraft were they flying for the airline?
Oh, gosh, I'm going to screw this up. C-130? No. I should be able to.
That's all right. That's all right. So the airline did eventually go out of business. What led to the demise of the airline?
Well, he was out of it before it actually went out of business. It became Airlift International, and I didn't follow it too closely after his involvement.
Sure, that makes
Wayne,
sense.
Wayne, they did have some crashes, which, you know, is always problematic, and some lawsuits related to that. And then some of the major commercial airlines also started getting into the cargo business, so they cut into that as well.
And we've been talking with Kim Sheeter, who is the author of How John Paul Riddle Made Safety Central to American Pilot Training. And Kim, I'm curious, what are some things that you learned from this experience of writing? You said that you had a goal to write it in a year. What were some of the things that you learned about aviation during this process? Tell us more about that.
I don't think I realized how incredibly embedded aviation was in the American imagination. Mm-hmm. I mean, I certainly knew people were excited about Lindbergh, but aviation was, you were a rock star astronaut god if you were an aviator in the late 20s to 30s. One of the funniest pieces of research I came across, and at least it struck me as funny, is I listened to and read the transcript of Calvin Coolidge's remarks to Lindbergh when he was awarding the Distinguished Flying Cross. And we don't really think of Cal Coolidge as a warm and fuzzy guy. I mean, he had the nickname Silent Cal. And he's gushing like a fanboy over Lindbergh, personally, not just his achievements, but character-wise. And that's understandable. There were five major movie directors who were pilots, so that influenced the movies in the 30s. There were about 12 sort of True Detective pulp fiction kind of magazines that were aviation related. There was the Junior Birdman Club that Hearst started. We could probably all sing the song. Aviation was everywhere. But safety wasn't the major concern in the beginning. And I have to be brutally honest and say, when aviation became more of an industry, I think that is really when more of the interest focused on safety, because if you're trying to make schedules and deliveries, you have to have your planes up and running and flying, and your pilots too.
Yeah, well, unfortunately we're out of time, but we do thank you for coming in and talking to us about your book on John Paul Riddle and making safety central to the American pilot training. If somebody was looking to get that book, where can they find that?
That is, the actual title is Air Minded, but it's Amazon, Walmart, pretty much any online bookseller you can find it.
All right, well, thank you for joining us. This has been Kim Sheeter, and this is EAA Radio.